Hello, and welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America, designed for people like you who are learning American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz in Washington. Every day of the year on this program, we bring you news from and about the United States and the world. Because this program is produced for learners of American English, like you, we speak a little slower than normal, and we use words and phrases that are easy to understand. Listen to the program, then practice saying the words and sentences the way we do. It's a free and easy way to improve your American English skills every day of the year. This is what you will hear on today's program. Brian Lynn will tell us about the new cars from Audi that will communicate with traffic signals. Murnush Karimian Ainsworth will tell us about a photographer who hopes to save endangered animals by taking pictures of them. In our What's Trending report, Ashley Thompson will tell us about the discovery of a tiny purple squid with very big eyes. On American Mosaic, Dan Friedel will play some of President Obama's favorite songs. I'll report on a study that tells how we can live longer. Hint, it involves chicken and plants. And Dorothy Gundy will be here with People in America. She will tell us about the nation's top disease fighter, Dr. Anthony Fauci. So, you can see, as always, we have a lot for you today. So, let's get started.
German car maker Audi is equipping some of its 2017 models in the United States with technology that will communicate with traffic signals. Information from the signals will let drivers know exactly when the light will change color. The technology is known as vehicle to infrastructure. It lets traffic signals and other infrastructure send safety and operations information wirelessly to vehicles. The equipment will be included on Audi's Q7, A4, and A4 all-road models built after June 1, 2016. The service is set to begin this year in at least 5 smart American cities. These include Las Vegas, Nevada, Seattle, Washington, and Washington, D.C. The information will come from government agencies that already collect data to predict and oversee traffic flow. A private company will partner with government officials to pass along the data to vehicles. Drivers will see a countdown on the car's instrument panel to show when the traffic signal will turn green or red. The message goes away a few seconds before the light changes, so drivers can turn their attention to safely proceeding. Pam Malhotra is general manager of Audi's Connected Vehicles Division. He said the system was designed to provide drivers with a sense of ease and convenience, not as a safety feature. A better informed driver means a less stressed driver, an announcer says in an Audi video explaining the technology. The company said the idea is to let drivers know exactly how long before a signal changes. It suggested they use the time to make sure other passengers are fine or monitor vehicle operations. The technology raises the possibility that some drivers may use the vehicle's downtime to talk on the telephone or send text messages. But Audi said it would never tell drivers to text while driving, an activity that is illegal in almost all 50 states. Many other automakers are experimenting with the technology. The goal is to eventually integrate traffic infrastructure with cars on many city roads. This would let traffic signals use the vehicle data to regulate traffic, suggest better driving paths, or suggest speeds needed to hit all green lights. I'm Brian Lynn.
American photographer Joel Sartori is taking pictures of animals in his effort to save them. He calls the effort PhotoArc. The National Geographic Society is providing financing for the project. The term ark comes from the large boat in which Noah, his family, and many creatures were saved from a great flood in ancient times. The flood is described in the writings of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. Joel Sartori hopes to photograph about 12,000 animals. They all are in danger of disappearing forever because of hunting, loss of habitat, and climate change. Sartori launched the project in 1995. He has taken pictures of about half the animals. He told VOA by email that he began thinking about endangered creatures when he was a teenager. He remembered reading a book about the North American wild pigeon. The bird is extinct now because it was hunted and its habitat was destroyed. He said the story had a strong effect on him. The last passenger pigeon died in her cage at the Cincinnati Zoo in Ohio, he said. She died in 1914, and the species went from billions to none. I couldn't get over that. Still can't. As Sartori grew up, he often thought of that last passenger pigeon. He noted, "I never dreamed I'd be meeting face to face with other species like frogs, birds, and even rhinos that are down to the last of their kind. But that's exactly what's happening now, and I feel like I've got to do something to turn things around while there's still time to save species." Some animal species he will never see again. One example is the Columbia Basin pygmy rabbit, which he photographed just before she died. It was the last of its kind. Sartori said that when he takes pictures, "I hope the animal glances back at me and makes eye contact. It doesn't always happen, but when it does, that's exactly the connection I'm hoping to make." The PhotoArc project began at a small zoo in Lincoln, Nebraska, Sartori's home. He has now traveled to more than 40 countries for the photography project. He said the animals most at risk are in Asia and Africa because of what he describes as human overpopulation. He recently visited the West African nations of Gabon and Cameroon. He said he saw major problems with habitat destruction from logging, farming, and poaching due to overpopulation. In Cameroon, he searched for the Cross River gorilla and the Goliath frog. He said he never saw the frog. They had all been caught and eaten by local people. And we saw just one of the gorillas in a rehab center, he noted. He said people are often so hungry that they eat animals they normally would not. Even small birds are killed for food. People are even eating bats, he noted. Sartori hopes his photos will persuade people to take steps to save the animals. He told VOA half of them could become extinct by the year 2100. I hope the public will finally stop and pay attention to the fact that we're all in this together, he said. There's still time to save the majority of species on the planet, but we must care and act now. As other species go extinct, so could we. Sartori is 54 years old. He hopes he will be able to finish the project, but he has a plan if he cannot. His oldest son is 22 years old and helps him from time to time. The young man has promised to continue the project if his father cannot. I'm Mernoush Karamian Ainsworth.
This is What's Trending Today. Have you ever heard of a googly-eyed, stubby squid? Well, you have now. Scientists working to map the Pacific Ocean floor off the coast of North America found a purple squid with big eyes. The squid is called the Rosia pacifica. It is only about 6 centimeters long. The small sea creature was found at a depth of about 900 meters off the coast of Southern California. Money for the mapping project comes from the Ocean Exploration Trust. The trust was the idea of Robert Ballard, who discovered the wreckage of the ship Titanic in 1985. The scientists making the map are working on a large boat called the Nautilus. The Nautilus has remote-controlled roving vehicles that can explore the ocean floor. The researchers have a number of cameras, all of which are connected to the boat with fiber optic cables. When researchers found the brightly colored squid, they were very excited. You can see the excitement in a video posted to YouTube. It has more than 1 million views. You can hear the scientists saying, "Whoa, what is that? He has weird eyes." The scientists are laughing. One of them jokingly suggests that the squid is actually a child's toy dropped into the ocean by accident. It turns out the Rosia pacifica uses its big eyes to look for shrimp that it can catch for food. The Nautilus left from Canada in May and will complete its trip in September. And that's what's trending today. I'm Ashley Thompson.
From Aloe Black.
Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man.
To Esperanza Spalding. Seven musicians are represented in two summer music playlists recently released by U.S. President Barack Obama. The music is available on Spotify, the streaming music service. The White House page on Spotify has links to playlists from Michelle Obama and Vice President Joe Biden, too. It is the second year the president released a list of favorite summer songs. He also released a list of five summer books. The list includes songs from more than 50 years of American, British, and world music. Obama starts with jazz stars Miles Davis and Charles Mingus, recorded in the late 1950s and early 1960s. The choices bring listeners through the years, finishing with 27-year-old singer Leon Bridges. Bridges' song, Smooth Sailin', came out in the summer of 2015.
Wake you down, smooth, smooth sailing.
Smooth sailing, yeah.
Smooth.
The music is organized into two lists. Some songs are meant for a summer day, and the others are for the season's warm nights. The daytime playlist includes the famous Beach Boys song, Good Vibrations. It came out in 1966. Good Vibrations is considered one of the most important songs of the Beach Boys' career.
I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations.
Also included is an extended version of Sinnerman by jazz singer Nina Simone. It is more than 10 minutes long. Simone was a popular singer for about 20 years, starting in the late 1950s.
What's the matter with you, Rock? Don't you see I need you, Rock? Lord, 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 hold on them day.
Jonathan Prince of Spotify told the New York Times that the service's most listened to playlist right now is that of the Commander-in-Chief. Prince said that was bananas or unusual. He said Obama could come to work at Spotify as a music chooser when his term ends in January. Rob Sheffield is a music writer for Rolling Stone. He called the list extremely good. He said it is the kind of list that might be written by a music lover or someone working full-time in the music business. British singer Corinne Bailey-Ray is on the playlist, too. Her song, Green Aphrodisiac, is on the nighttime list. She told the New York Times that Obama's list reflects the influence of soul music from the late 1970s. After all, That was when Obama was a teenager. The list also includes Aretha Franklin, Sarah Bareilles, and Janelle Monáe. Combined, the songs have a total running time of just under 3 hours. Plenty of time if you are relaxing on summer vacation. The Obamas returned to Washington Sunday from a summer trip to Martha's Vineyard in Massachusetts. I'm Dan Friedel.
The average American eats a lot of red meat, such as beef, and meat from other mammals. Meat eaters often note that red meat has a lot of protein, which helps repair muscles and build bones. But new research shows that if people want to live a long and healthy life, they should get their protein from plants. Dr. Mingyang Song and Dr. Andrew Chan work at Massachusetts General Hospital and Harvard University. They and other researchers examined how proteins from animals and proteins from plants affect human health. They examined information from two major long-term studies. The studies gathered information about the diet, lifestyle, and health of more than 130,000 people. Dr. Chan says the information showed how to live a longer and healthier life. One important finding was that people who ate the highest amounts of animal-based protein, such as red meat, had a higher risk of dying earlier. They were especially at risk of dying earlier from heart-related problems. One reason is that red meat has high levels of cholesterol, which has been linked to heart disease. The researchers found that heart-related or cardiovascular problems were higher among people who ate meat and also smoked, drank heavily, were obese, and did not exercise. While getting protein is important, red meat is not the only or best source. Dr. Chan said researchers found that people who replaced animal protein with plant protein in their diet reduced their risk of early death. The study appears in the medical journal JAMA Internal Medicine.
His name is Dr. Anthony S. Fauci. Some Americans may never have heard of him, but his work affects tens of millions of people. Fauci is the United States' top doctor when it comes to infectious diseases. He leads the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases at the United States National Institutes of Health. It investigates emerging diseases like Zika and Ebola. It also leads research into diseases HIV/AIDS, tuberculosis and malaria, and allergies. Fauci studied at Cornell University Medical College. He then completed his internship and residency there. Dr. Fauci says he likes talking about science to the general public in a way they can understand why it is important to support it. Fauci says it was his education at a Catholic high school in New York that influenced him to consider a career in healthcare.
Well, I was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York. My father is a pharmacist, so I had some exposure to the health issue, but I don't think that was the major thing leading me into medicine. It was mostly training in high school and college and by the Jesuits, who taught humanities, classics, Greek, Latin. So I became much more of a humanitarian type person than a scientific type person. So I figured the best way to combine an aptitude towards science with a desire to do something that strongly relates to people and taking care of people, you put all of those things together and you come up with the field of medicine in my mind.
In 1968, Fauci came to the National Institutes of Health, NIH, as a clinical associate in the Laboratory of Clinical Investigation in NIAID. Since then, he has held many important positions, including chief of the Laboratory of Immunoregulation, a position he still holds. Dr. Fauci also has made many contributions to basic and clinical research on the pathogenesis and treatment of immune-mediated and infectious diseases. Acquired immune deficiency syndrome, or AIDS in particular, is one of those infectious diseases. Just as AIDS was beginning to kill thousands of young men across the country, Dr. Fauci was there doing research at NIH. He helped change rules in order to approve drugs for the virus and the disease. In time, these new treatments turned HIV/AIDS into a manageable condition. An HIV or AIDS diagnosis was no longer a death sentence.
When we first got involved in studying what turned out to be AIDS, we didn't even know what the agent is that caused AIDS. All of the research that was funded by the NIH and our collaborators and people down here have led everything from the identification of the agent, the development of diagnostics, to the combinations of drugs that we now have that can actually get a person with AIDS or HIV infection to live essentially a normal lifespan. That's one of the most impressive medical advances in the history of medicine.
Dr. Fauci is the recipient of many awards. President George W. Bush presented him with the nation's highest civilian honor, the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Bush said Fauci's work on AIDS in Africa reached millions of people, preventing HIV infections in infants and easing suffering and bringing dying communities back to life.
One of the moments among a few, and I'll just mention a few, that I'm most proud of in my life, my role as the director of an institute that funds most of the research in infectious diseases and the drive towards the development of what has now turned out to be life-saving therapies for a number of diseases, but particularly HIV/AIDS. We've also developed a number of vaccines against very important diseases. And importantly, in 2002, President George W. Bush asked me to go to Africa to see if I could put together a program that would provide life-saving interventions in HIV, a program which ultimately came to be known as the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, or PEPFAR, which already has been responsible for saving several million lives in the developing world.
I'm Dorothy Gundy.
That's our program for today. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz in Washington.